diet for workers and sick. Sunnyside, Currumbong, July 10, 1896. Dr. J.H. Kellogg, Battle Creek, Michigan. Dear brother, there are those associated with you that should ever have kept before them their aptness and inclination to use poisonous drugs that kill if they do not relieve. The light that God has given upon the subject of disease and its causes needs to be dwelt upon largely, for it is the wrong habit of indulgence of appetite and careless, reckless inattention to proper care for the body that tells upon the people. Habits of cleanliness, care in regard to that which is introduced into the mouth, should be observed. You are to make no prescription that no flesh meat shall never be used, but you are to educate the mind and let the light shine in. Let the individual conscience be awakened in regard to self-preservation and self-purity from every perverted appetite. The variety of food at one meal causes unpleasantness and destroys the good which each article, if taken alone, would do the system. This practice causes constant suffering and often death. You have too little care and feel too lightly the burden of providing an orderly, ample repast for your workers. They are the ones who need an abundance of fresh, wholesome provision. They are constantly taxed. Their vitality must be preserved. Their principles should be educated. They of all in the sanitarium should be abundantly furnished with the best and most wholesome, strength-giving food. The table of your helpers should be furnished not with meat, but with an abundant supply of good fruit, grains, and vegetables, prepared in a nice, wholesome way. Your neglect to do this has increased your income at altogether an expense to the strength and souls of your workers. This has not pleased the Lord. The influence of the entire affair does not recommend your principles to those that sit at the helpers' tables. If they are worthy to compose your family, they are worthy of the very best and most strength-giving diet, that seeds may not be planted in their breasts which will germinate and bring forth a harvest to the dishonor of God. But this has been done, and this must have attention. Equality must be practiced as well as talked. The God that gave His only begotten Son to die for the redemption of the sinful race will not approve the management of the table for workers at the sanitarium. The money saved by limiting the table supplies, by not providing fresh, wholesome food, and not taking pains to get a right preparation in food, but to provide odds and ends, is a loss. The ones who give the treatment and care for the sick are taxed in their labor and must have greater privileges than have been given them if their hearts are to be kept from temptation and corruption. This line of work has been neglected. Let the education be given line upon line, precept upon precept, that we are all servants, all work done in serving ministers of the gospel. All the servants of God are to be respected, loved, cared for. There are servants who work in caring for the sick who need to have vital force to do their work intelligently and thoroughly, and with go-on cheer in their hearts. All the time they are to feel that their labors are appreciated and that they must be kind, cheerful, hopeful, full of faith, having words they can speak to poor suffering ones. There are many things that need to be corrected and made wholesome and beautiful so that the angels of God may not see preference for one and dishonor for another. While eating of flesh of dead animals is deleterious to the health of the body, while all who use meat diet are increasing their animal passions and are lessening the susceptibility of the soul to realize the force of truth and the necessity of its being brought into their practical life, this meat-eating question needs to be guarded. When one changes from the stimulating diet of meat-eating to the fruit and vegetable diet, there will always be a sense of weakness and a lack of vitality, and many urge this as an argument for the necessity of a meat diet. The change should not be urged to be made too abruptly, especially for those who are taxed with continuous labor. Let the conscience be educated, the will energized, and the change can be made much more readily and willingly. The consumptives who are going steadily down to the grave should not make particular changes in this respect, but care should be exercised to obtain the most healthy animals that can be found. Persons with tumors running their life away should not be burdened with a question as to whether they should leave meat eating or not. Be careful to make no stringent resolutions in regard to this matter. It will not help the case to force changes, but will do injury to the non-meat eating principles. Give lectures in the parlor, educate the mind, but force no one, for such reformation made under pressure is worthless, and they will surely go back to the meat-eating diet. Enlighten the mind that God would be pleased to have the body free from disease. The greatest cause of disease is in the food taken into the system in large meat-eating. When you remove the meat from the table, you have a work to do to substitute articles of food tasteful and appetizing in fruits and grains. Meat will soon be forgotten in arousing the conscience and the determined will brought into action. There is to be no forcing the mind, but educating it to view the subject from a right standpoint. There needs to be presented to all students and physicians, and by them to others, that the whole animal creation is more or less diseased. Diseased meat is not rare, but common. Every phase of disease is brought into the human system through subsisting upon the flesh of dead animals. That feebleness and weakness in consequence of change from meat diet will soon be overcome, and physicians ought to understand that they should not make the stimulants of meat eating essential for health and strength. All who leave it alone intelligently will have, after becoming accustomed to the change, health of sinews and muscles. More again. Ellen G. White.